Now, I have always been the type of person who finishes his plate of food. Any other plate finishers out there? Okay. I've been married to my wife, Megan, for more than 11 years now, and it still surprises me how she can leave a corner of toast on her plate. Or she'll leave just one little dollop of rice and veggies with like a whole bite of chicken. Just, she's full. And I said, "What? But that's good. It's out there on your plate alone and cold and lonely, and it needs to join its friends inside my stomach." See, I've never had that problem. My plate at the end of a meal barely needs to be washed before it's put away because I've hunted down every single last grain of rice, every single last morsel of food, and I've practically licked it clean because very rarely have I ever pushed back from a plate of food with food still on it with that feeling of like contented peace, resting that I've had enough. And when was the last time you felt that? And I'm not talking about like only with food, but when was the last time you felt that feeling of contentment, that peace that comes resting in just delighting what you have? What you have is enough. See, for most of us, our experience is different than that. Most of us experience the never-ending role of desire in our life, the always hungry desire for more. And the truth about desire is that it is never satisfied. 1,000 years before Jesus walked the earth, the writer of Ecclesiastes said, "The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear with hearing." A more recent philosopher put it this way, "I can't get no satisfaction. No matter how much we get, it's never enough." And the culture around us just reinforces this endless pursuit and hunger. There used to be a time at night when you'd be watching TV, and at a certain point in the evening, the TV channel would just stop. Does anyone remember when TV channels stopped for the night and it became static? Not anymore. We have the endless 24/7 media cycle. At work, we have endless emails, insatiable work quotas. We never finish our work. We just stop for the day knowing there's going to be more when we get back tomorrow. And in our personal lives, weeknights and weekends fill up because there's always another kid's sports schedule. There's always another load of laundry. There's always another repair project around the house to do. And so our only escape is the endless scroll on our phones, constantly hungry for a new video, a new recipe, a new item on Amazon. And marketing departments the world over know exactly how to design each and every one of the 4,000 ads that we see every day so that we are left unsatisfied. That way we're ensured to be constantly chasing more money, more clothes, more things, more square footage, more experiences, more relationships, more, more, more. But it's never enough. As another modern philosopher sang, "I still haven't found what I'm looking for." Rest, contentment, peace. It's always just out of reach. Is there a way off the hamster wheel? Is there an antidote to this endless craving that is leaving us sick? According to the Bible, yes. God has given us the gift of Sabbath. Today, we're going to discuss the fact that Sabbath is how apprentices of Jesus wage war on the endless pursuit of more, the restlessness that leaves us forever unsatisfied. Now, previously, we talked about how the Hebrew word Shabbat has four aspects. It's like the facets of a diamond. You can turn it around and see a different aspect of it. Four aspects of Sabbath: stop, rest, delight, and worship. Last week, we talked about making space to stop. This week, we're going to look at rest. Now, when most people hear rest, they think nap, vacation, couch time. And those can be good ways to experience physical rest. But just like we mentioned last time, we don't just need physical rest. And biblical rest is about more than just physical tiredness. See, when God created Sabbath, we see right in the beginning, Genesis chapter 2, his final act of creation. After creating everything there was, he still created something on that rest day. He created the rhythm of work and rest, setting aside one day out of every seven as holy, special, for a specific sacred purpose, God created rest. He created Sabbath as an integral part of creation. Work is good, but work is incomplete without the rhythm of rest that God created. And we see Jesus reinforce this with his invitation in Matthew chapter 11. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest for your souls." Because resting from physical labor is not the only thing we need. We also need rest from the worry that comes as a result of our work. Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, he suggests that when the Sabbath command tells us to do all our work in 6 days, who can actually finish all their work in 6 days? There's no way. So when that command is telling us to finish all our work in 6 days, that means that resting on the seventh day, we rest as if our work is done. We don't even let the worries of future tasks burden us during the Sabbath. So he says, rest from even the thought of work. Sabbath rest is an invitation to rest from work, to rest from worry, but it's also an invitation to rest from wanting. The consumer culture we've already talked about that keeps us chasing, keeps us desiring, never satisfied, enslaved to the pursuit of more. And it shouldn't surprise us that Jesus knew the type of deeper rest we would need, even in this modern world, all the way back when God established Sabbath as a part of the way of life in his kingdom. So turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5, if you're using the Black Seatback Bibles in front of you, you can find it on page 126 of the Old Testament. But Deuteronomy is going to sound familiar if you were with us last week. Last week, we looked at when God first gave the Ten Commandments, and that's in Exodus chapter 20. And that happened in Exodus right after God's people had been rescued from Egypt. And so he was establishing what it meant to be his people. They had spent 400 years under Egyptian culture, Egyptian religious practices. And so Yahweh God needed to retrain his people how to be his people. But Deuteronomy picks up decades later as the people stand on the edge of the promised land. The first generation that had escaped Egypt, they had all passed away. And so this generation was their children. And so God takes time again to reestablish what it means for them to be his people right before they go into the promised land to drive out all the other peoples living there. So let's read it together. Deuteronomy chapter 5, beginning in verse 12. "Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, or your male or female slave, or your ox or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the resident alien in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as well as you. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, there are two differences between the Sabbath command in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. And so I try to put them both up on the screen. I know they're small, but I'm going to talk you through them. The first is a small difference right at the beginning. In Exodus, it starts with the words, "Remember the Sabbath." Remember. But here in Deuteronomy, it says, "Observe the Sabbath." Now, in Hebrew, the word for observe is shamar, which means to keep watch over, to guard. We do this today when we observe a holiday, a holy day like Christmas or Easter, right? We guard it. We make it special and unique. That's the idea that God is getting at for the Sabbath. It's supposed to be kept like a weekly holiday. We're supposed to guard it as special so that it doesn't get glossed over like any other ordinary day. That's change number one, observe. And the rest of the command between Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, pretty much the same until you get to the end. And that's where there is a major change. Now in Exodus, the command ends with, "For in 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." But here in Deuteronomy, it says, remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. So it's the same command, but two completely different reasons behind the command. In Exodus, the command is grounded in the story of creation. This is how God created the world, with this rhythm of rest and work. So therefore, remember to keep it. But here in Deuteronomy, Sabbath is grounded in the story of liberation and rescue. He says, you were, past tense, you were slaves in Egypt, but you're not slaves anymore. See, last week we talked about rest as a rhythm, but this week we're going to look at how rest is resistance. Give me a chance to explain it. If you read through the Exodus story of what conditions were like before God's people were rescued from slavery, we see restlessness on display. We can just look at a couple excerpts from chapter 5 of Exodus on how Pharaoh drove the slaves so hard. He's talking to Moses and Aaron, and he says, why are you taking the people away from the work? Get back to your labors. Later on, he says, well, let heavier work be laid on them, because then they'll pay attention to it and not to deceptive words. Because Moses and Aaron were trying to say, hey, can you let all of our people go out to the wilderness to worship our God? Just give us a break, a quick weekend. We're going to worship God. And he says, you're lazy. Lazy. That is why you say, let us go sacrifice to the Lord. Go now and work, for no straw will be given to you, but you shall still deliver the same number of bricks. See, even if you haven't read the whole Exodus story, you can just see from these excerpts, Pharaoh is a cruel tyrant. And the slaves are only valued for what they produced, which was never enough. No rest for them, just more, more, more. But Pharaoh got to rest. Pharaoh got to enjoy a lavish, opulent lifestyle, but that was only made possible by the abuse of cheap labor. So no rest for the slaves. Slaves work all day, every day, until they die. But when God set them free, he reestablished rest for them. And so the command is to remember, you were slaves in Egypt, but you're not anymore. You're in a new kingdom with a new king. And in this kingdom, your value is not in what you produce. But while you experience this freedom, while you're experiencing the freedom of no more daily quota, no more slave drivers over you, make sure never to become a slave driver yourself. And so that's why the Sabbath command lists out male and female servants, foreigners, even the animals, because under the Sabbath, all are equal and equally deserving of rest. And I'm trying to convince you today that we need this practice more than ever, because we still live under the tyranny of modern day pharaohs. I learned from Pastor John Mark Comer that Egypt has long been used as an archetype for empires down throughout history. And if any of you carry cash, you can just look on the back of a US dollar and you're gonna see a symbol on it. What symbol do you see on the back of a US dollar? A pyramid. Absolutely, a pyramid has been a symbol of empire for all throughout history. And if you look at the back of the US dollar, the pyramid has 13 levels for 13 colonies, but the pyramid is unfinished, signifying that there's still a desire for more. Which is why the average American works more hours than any other nation in the world. It doesn't matter that technology has given us things like dishwashers and GPS and microwaves. You know, these things that are time-saving devices or labor-saving devices. They are supposed to take over the menial tasks so that we can live like the Jetsons. But no, here we are. In the last 60 years of innovation, we actually have 37% less leisure time now than most Americans did back in the 60s and 70s. We work more than ever before. And we have more than ever before. Lowball estimates say that we now spend 2 to 3 times more on goods and services than previous generations did in 1945. And our homes are now 3 times larger and full of more than twice as many items. This blew my mind. Did you know that the average American home, each one of your homes, has more than 300,000 items in it? I'm not talking about rich homes or just homes that end up on that show of hoarders. The average American home has more than 300,000 items in it. And apparently that's not enough because we now have 2.3 billion square footage of self-storage in our country. But in spite of that, we're unhappier than ever. According to sociologists, happiness levels peaked in the 50s, and they've been in decline ever since. Pastor John Mark Comer points out that that timeline coincides with right around when blue laws were phased out and the Lord's Day or the Sabbath was secularized and we just started calling it the weekend. We work more than ever before. We have more than ever before, but we're still less happy than ever before. It's Egypt all over again. But it's too easy to get sucked into the culture, isn't it? To be convinced that we have to work those extra hours to get ahead. To be convinced that we have to reach that certain standard of living to be happy. That you have to own that certain number of shoes, that certain type of truck, that certain amount of square footage. We have to find good deals online, even though we're pretty sure that the only way it can be that good of a price is if there's some sketchy labor laws somewhere in the world. But I'm not going to think about that. That's just the way of the world anyways. I'll just click buy because I have to have it. But it doesn't have to be this way because Sabbath is an act of resistance. It's a rebellion against the forces of empire that oppress us and others. Sabbath is a way of speaking with your body, with your schedule, enough. Enough work. Work is a good thing, but it's not the thing. Enough striving, because ambition without limit, without control, it becomes the controller. Enough stuff. Stuff isn't bad, but most of us have more than enough stuff. Enough screens. You know, 40 years ago, there was a book that came out that talked about the destructive nature of TV shows and show business. And the book was called Amusing Ourselves to Death. How much more true of it is it now, 40 years later? No, Sabbath is how we wage war on our addiction to accomplishment and accumulation. Regularly practicing Sabbath breaks us free from the enslavement of accomplishment, what I do, and the enslavement to accumulation, what I have. Later in the Old Testament, followers of Yahweh tried to figure out guidelines around how to live in Sabbath, and they actually made guidelines about not buying and not selling on the Sabbath, because it then becomes a practical rebellion against the forces of empire. One pastor I know says that his family tries not to shop or even talk about what they want more of on the Sabbath. Instead, it's a day to practice gratitude and enjoy what God has already provided for them. A few weeks ago, Megan and I were trying to reestablish our Sabbath rhythm as a family. It had been a crazy summer. We'd gone totally out of rhythm. We were trying to reestablish, and at one point in the middle of the day, I realized I had to take my phone and put it away in a drawer because I kept looking around on our day off, our day of celebration or relaxation, and kept thinking of the things we didn't have that we needed. Oh, we need some more of that. And then I'd start scrolling and start seeing some things, and oh, I'll add that to my cart in Amazon. I got stuck, and oh, that'd be cool too. Now, is it a sin to add things to your Amazon cart? No, not at all. But on a day that was supposed to be set aside to connect with God and thank him for what he has provided for us, for what we have already. Instead, I was getting sucked into the frenzy of scrolling and thinking about what I did not yet have. Of course, that was pulling me away for what God was trying to create for me and the family. But Sabbath is a practical way to fight the frenzy. Sabbath helps us wage war on the cultural addictions that have enslaved us. Sabbath helps us resist the endless pursuit of satisfaction through getting more. Now, how do we do that? How are we supposed to learn the unforced rhythms of grace that Jesus offers when what comes naturally is restlessness? Now, last week, I encouraged you to pick a Sabbath window, whether it's a day like Sunday that you're going to experience the Sabbath, or if you can't do a whole day, what's a four-hour window of time, and simply practice stopping. Stop work and stop screens. Now, how I try to think of it is that I want to rest from work, from worry, and from wanting. Sabbath rest for me involves resting from work. And this means paid work and unpaid work. The Sabbath isn't just a day off where you get all your chores done that you didn't have time to do the rest of the week, right? And so maybe that means that I need to prepare a little bit more the day before so that I can truly stop and connect with God, so I can truly rest. And that doesn't mean just selfishly laying around and ignoring my responsibilities. But if I've taken care of my responsibilities throughout the week, then on a Sabbath, I can actually turn to God on my Sabbath and be open to Him. And this is going to be different for each of us, right? For some people, working in your garden is really restful. Getting your hands in the dirt, working in that garden, it helps you connect with God and His creation and be thankful for the ways that He has provided for you. For me, working in the garden is a chore. I hate it. I'm bad at it. It's always sticky and sharp and sweaty and awful. And I say words that a pastor shouldn't be saying. And like, it is not restful for me in the garden. But mowing the lawn on my zero-turn Cub Cadet mower, just me and my thoughts, me praying to God. I don't even have those headphones that are like blocking out noise so I can listen to a podcast. So I don't even have that. It's just me and the whir of the engine and the lines back and forth, connecting with God. So that's very restful for me, but it might be different for you. So I rest from work, but it's also resting from worry. Try not to think about work. For me personally, I try not to look at our finances or look at whether or not we're on budget on a Sabbath day. That's not restful. I try not to think about the stuff that still needs to get done. I'll write down a note, put it away. Because Sabbath is a line in the sand that we are choosing to trust God. We're not trying to anxiously control our own lives under our own power all the time. And so resisting worry on the Sabbath is part of the practice that helps us become transformed by Jesus to trust Him more. But also, as I've said, one of the things in our culture that enslaves us is the desire for more, more, more. So Sabbath is about resting from wanting. And so I'd suggest that you resist the urge to browse or to scroll or to shop on the Sabbath. Instead, Sabbath is about experiencing gratitude for what God has already provided for us. Pastor John Mark Comer makes the point that accomplishment and accumulation aren't evil. They can even be good, but they need a limit. Sabbath is the opportunity to draw a line in the sand and say, I do not need to work more hours. I do not need to make more money. I do not need a new car or nicer curb appeal or anyone else's approval, because I already have my Heavenly Father's approval. And He is a good Father who gives good gifts and takes care of me. And this isn't a change that happens immediately in your life. Just like with any spiritual habit, transformation takes time. And for anyone who's ever experienced any addiction recovery, or if you have someone in your family that's experienced recovery from addiction, you know addiction takes time to reverse. And some of us are workaholics. Some of us are shopaholics. Some of us are scrollaholics. Some of us are successaholics. And we all know the pull. We're addicted to more. But Sabbath is God's weekly gift to break that cycle. And so this week, one of the ways that you can practice this is I'd like you to write down what's one yesaholic tendency that you get pulled into all the time that you feel God is saying, rest from that on the Sabbath. What's one that you can write down to actually resist with Sabbath this week? What's the thing that God is inviting you to put down on your Sabbath so that you can better connect with Him? I can't tell you what it is for you. And I can't force you to do it either. I just make suggestions. You're the one that makes decisions. But I think that Jesus is inviting you to decide to obey Him with this week. Because Sabbath is how we wage war on these addictions and these slave drivers. But it's just like the Apostle Paul tells us in Ephesians, our war isn't against flesh and blood. It's against principalities and powers, the spiritual forces of darkness. And it's going to be a fight, because everything around us is opposed to this type of Sabbath rhythm of rest that trains us to trust God. Everything around us doesn't want us to trust God more. No, it's designed to keep us Sabbathless, to keep us rhythmless. is designed to keep us going and going and wanting and more until our soul is hollowed out and numb. There are spiritual forces at work around us to keep us enslaved, to keep us from Sabbath rest, whether it's racial injustice, sexism, inequality, greed, corruption on every level of politics and society. All of that is absolutely animated by dark spiritual powers that are anti-Sabbath because they are anti-God's way of life. And so when we practice Sabbath, we are waging war. We are defying these systems and powers to align ourselves with a new kingdom, the true king, the God of Sabbath. And in the words of Pastor John Mark Comer, I've mentioned him a couple times already, he says that Egypt isn't just around us, it's inside us as well. In order to Sabbath, to rest, we need to not only resist the external forces, but we need to resist the internal pull of restlessness that we find in our heart marred by sin. We have to resist our own greed, our own envy, our own discontentment. We have to push back on our own anxiety and our addiction. It's a tug of war inside our chest, right? We long for Jesus, but we resist full surrender. But Sabbath helps us remember we're not slaves anymore. It helps us remember that Pharaoh's armies are drowned at the bottom of the sea. It helps us remember that God is king, and he's nothing like that raging tyrant. The question is, will we follow him? Will we obey him? Will we resist the pull of the world and say yes to God's invitation? Because Jesus, who calls himself Lord of the Sabbath, gives us this invitation: come to me, all of you who are weary, and I will give you rest for your souls. Isn't that good news? Amen.